Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. It's March 8th, 2021, and I am really stressed about getting seeds, and getting them started this week.
Yeah, you woke up this morning and said, it's the first thing you said, you're like, half asleep, let's go to the store and buy seeds.
Well, I meant to do it last week, and then I meant to do it. And they were meant to do it the week before, and there aren't going to be any. There's going to be like big seed shortages.
I think the seed supply is going to be fine in this country. We have.
No, you don't know that. People are buying already. I've read lots of things about how it's.
It should be a better. I'm looking forward to gardening this year because it should be much better than last year. We had snow all over the ground for most of the time, which, as I say, I didn't know this, but that's probably why we had such a bad gardening year last year, is that the water in the soil wasn't sufficient.
We didn't have enough snow, you mean?
Yeah.
But we've had a lot of snow.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what they say.
I mean, who are they? Just like nice, interesting people? That's not what we were going to talk about. Although it is upwards in my mind. Should we just have a gardening episode?
Not yet. Because we can't garden, it would just be like frustrating.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. So, I thought it was really funny. I mean, it's not funny, but I did watch. I didn't actually watch the clip. There's a big flap online because a pastor wearing a superhero T-shirt, who's kind of himself not in the best shape of his life, probably, said something last week about how women needed to be more beautiful, and he flashed a big picture of Melania Trump on the jumbotron.
It's like, was there this is the model? Is this,
yeah, and he said, and I'm quoting from memory here, not all of you can be a trophy wife, but you can at least try for a participation trophy.
That's awesome. Yes.
And then he was removed and put on a leave of absence so he could go to counseling.
Now that's okay. Now I'm sorry. They should never remove the poor guy. He was just expressing himself.
Yeah, where's his expressive individualism?
Right. I mean,
if Meghan can be super sad about how she doesn't get to be queen, then this guy can be sad about how he's not
his wife married isn't to really his
Trump. Well, how come some people get what they want and other people don't get it?
I mean, I guess he probably should have said something like...
He shouldn't have said... That shouldn't have been the topic of the sermon.
Well, no, but okay, he shouldn't be preaching about that. Yeah. But like in Christian counseling, we've said things like, you know, try to be healthy, keep yourself in shape. To both men and women, though, not just to women.
I mean, we have a lot of men who could...
Like, if a man is, like, totally letting himself go and becoming a slob and, you know, just... You know, he's dribbling food down his chin into his fat stomach, then we would say, hey, guy, you know, maybe the reason why you're having relationship problems is because you're a fat slob. We wouldn't say it that way. We would say, you might want to get in shape. And we might say the same thing for a woman, and that's not bad.
I've never said that to a woman.
I wouldn't say it like that, of course. We would say, you know, you both probably need to be healthy because
you should care for one another.
That would increase your desire for one another. Like if you smell all the time and don't take a shower,
this is like
you should probably take a shower.
Such dicey territory.
Yeah, okay. No, but I mean that was this kind of does lead into what we were talking about today, doesn't it?
Well, what this guy obviously is a proponent of the patriarchy, and plus he's white, and so I bet he voted for Trump, and so there's your segue right into
yeah.
I swear I don't have COVID. I just, you know, when the weather goes up and down, the temperature goes up and down, everybody's lungs fill with
stuff.
Pollen. Okay, so we did read. You're not reading it because.
I can't read it without getting angry, so.
You have to read it because the Stand Firm, we wanted to do a joint, like bringing the men and women together in some kind of patriarchal matriarchal mashup, because
to talk about,
we hate men and women. We just hate all people. I'm reading this Jesus and John Wayne book. I actually already read it.
That's what we're talking. That's what the mashup is for. Is the,
yeah,
is
to talk and the Stand Firm crowd. Well, some of us who actually did get through the book were sort of shuddering with misery because it was such. I don't know. I know I'm supposed to be really respectful. I'm supposed to be really respectful. The problem is that I felt like Dumais. I don't know how to say Dumais. Her name.
It was Dumais.
Well, that's how it's spelled. I've heard it pronounced both ways. I mean, I'm struggling for words. It's interesting to me. She doesn't have to worry about her tone because she's saying something that everybody already knows and already feels. And so she can just write sort of a whatever kind of sweeping book that she wants, and everybody's saying that she's stunning and brave. Whereas me being critical of her, I have got to be really careful to watch my tone and not to sound reactionary or defensive because I'm right on the wrong side of history right now, even though I don't love Trump. And again, not a Trump fan. I don't know how many times you have to say that. Not excited about Trump. Well, but because I don't think that her, you know, this is a classic case. You know those wonderful graphs of those you overlay studies or graphs of things like the number of people who ate bananas and in a year and the number of people who died.
Oh, right. The false correlation.
Yes, the false correlation graphs. Those are so fun. So not being a statistician or a historian.
Does it seem like a false? I do, the whole book seems like a false correlation graph?
Yes. You like, just because two things are standing side by side doesn't mean that one of them has caused the other thing. So here, do you want her? I shouldn't say too much because we're going to podcast about it and I'm going to write about it. It's going to be never ending. But here's her thesis. I'll just let you react because your participation in the Stand Firm thing is just going to be your saying.
Yeah, see, I'm not read. I'm going to sit back and say, well, that's stupid. What a dumb book.
You're a patriarchalist. I did feel triggered the entire thing. Okay, but here's her thesis. Evangelical support for Trump was no aberration, nor was it a merely pragmatic choice. It was the culmination of evangelicals' embrace of militant masculinity, an ideology that enshrines patriarchal authority and condones the callous display of power at home and abroad. Incidentally, I read this line again right as Mr. Biden was deciding to bomb Syria. And I was like,
wait a minute.
Wait, because I'm not Mr. Trump, like pulled back from all the bombing of things around the world, but whatever. Okay. By the time Trump arrived, proclaiming himself their savior, conservative white evangelicals had already traded a faith that privileges humility and elevates the least of these for one that derides gentleness as a province of wusses. Rather than turning the other cheek, they'd resolved to defend their faith and their nation, secure in the knowledge that the ends justify the means. Having replaced the Jesus of the Gospels for a vengeful warrior Christ, it's no wonder many came to think of Trump in the same way. In 2016, many observers were stunned at evangelicals' apparent betrayal of their own values. In reality, evangelicals did not cast their vote despite their beliefs, but because of them. So that's her thesis.
Wow. Is that two paragraph or one paragraph? Honestly, I mean, I can't count the slanderous accusations there in that one shot. First of all, I would like to hear her definition of evangelical. First of all, does she do that? Does she define evangelical?
Not theologically. She defines it culturally and in terms of it.
Okay.
In terms of its consumer habits.
Secondly, patriarchalism is good. So I mean, there may be a toxic form of it, but at heart, it's good. It's shot through the Bible, so it's not a bad thing. So it's good. Secondly, masculinity is good. Like an aggressive masculinity is fine. Thirdly, effeminacy is bad. effeminacy is a
okay,
sin.
This if you're, isn't if you're gonna okay, help, okay, okay, you can't just be like right. fifthly. 17thly.
I'm just trying to get all the things in my head that I, that this that was.
Okay, well, okay. Can I can I back up? Yep. I when Mr. Trump first came into the world in a political way, I was invited to write, actually for CT back way back in the way back.
By CT, you mean
Christianity Today. Okay. I reviewed two books, The Left Behind, by a Princeton sociologist who couldn't understand how we had Trump. And so he went into the heartland and tried to find some of these people, these unicorn people who had voted for Trump, and understand how they could have done such a wicked thing.
Why are these people so stupid?
And basically.
Why are these people so ignorant and foolish?
And then he went and he saw that they were human, but he could never understand, except that they felt really left behind. And if you get it like left the left behind, right, get right, it. Right. Okay, so then the other book was, actually I loved that book, Something in the Heartland, and I lent it to somebody who never gave it back to me. It was a series of essays from somebody up here in New York, who was kind of, who was definitely on the left, but lived in a town like ours, which is like rural poor, and
former working class. If they had any factories, they would be working class.
Yeah, but and there's no right. there's no work, so there's no class. And I thought his, again, didn't like Trump, but didn't hate all Trump voters. And so that's the pickle. How is it that we got somebody who was so brash, who was so, inelegant, who was so mean on Twitter, who is a philanderer, who has been married 400 or 500 times, and who said things like, I'm the greatest, I'm the best at everything I do, I'm the best Christian. How could we get that sort of person? And I had the theory that we got that person because he embodies the American soul, not just evangelical, but like, he is American. Mr. Trump is deeply American. But what he did is illustrate the fault line that exists between the elite and the non-elite. Yeah. It's a class issue. Yeah. Very, very huge class issue. And right before I read this Dumet's book, I read The Revolt of the Elites by Christopher Lash. Right. If you want to... And that was written in the 90s. Like, if you want to understand why we had Trump, that's a better book to read. And the other better book to read is called Moral Combat, which provides context for why things happened. This book, there's no context. It's just drawing lines between things and saying that one thing causes another without proving it. Other books provide context for why things happened. So, like, for instance, this person doesn't mention Hugh Hefner.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's...
Which I would say is a toxic masculinity.
That's a good example of toxic masculinity. John Wayne, not so much.
I mean, he's an actor.
Right.
So, like...
Right, I mean, okay,
he's a good actor.
Can we go back to what the
movies are funny? Biggest, like, he was a funny actor.
Right. Can we go back to the biggest glaring, slanderous bit in that little thing you quoted?
Sure.
I know.
What, I just want you to do whatever you want to do, because as a woman, I just think it's important that men fully express themselves without any hindrance.
I have no doubt there are people who are just like who blend together their Christianity and their politics, you know, like the Episcopal Church does, and on the right do that. No doubt.
Tons of people do it on the right.
No doubt.
And tons of people do however, it on the left. Everyone does
however,
it.
However, I would suggest that the vast majority of people who identify as Christian, evangelical, whatever, voted for Trump because of Biden. Because of
Hillary.
or Hillary, whatever.
Yeah, because of Hillary. Right. Like,
well, first Hillary, but then Biden.
Yeah. Like, so, in both cases,
you have a horrible alternative.
Okay, no. Let me read you what kind of person Hillary is.
Oh.
Can I
just
jump over here? This is also, I thought, well, you haven't properly described me as an evangelical, so I don't believe anything you're saying here. But what were you had that quote up. The thing is that Neil Shenvey is reading this also and putting quotes up on Twitter, and people are arguing about it. Oh no, I should have. But you know, also, like, the Duggars are in here. Did you know that Billy Graham was a toxic patriarchalist? A real he-man? Okay, ready? Here's Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was a devout Christian. but the wrong kind.
No, she wasn't. She's not a devout Christian. She wants to murder babies and blaspheme.
Stop shouting. Your shouting is inappropriate. She spoke about her Methodist faith frequently during the 2016 campaign, reciting favorite passages of scripture with ease.
Catherine Jefferts Schori talks about her Episcopal faith all the time.
You know, it's funny.
This is absurd.
About 2016.
Wait. Do people who are actual Christians think this is a legitimate critique? Are people thinking? I mean, like some of the women you're reading who are actual Christians think that that's a legitimate thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to keep my voice from going
calm
to where
yourself,
it wants to go. That
stupid patriarchalist.
That is asinine. That is asinine. No, if you read that book and you think that Hillary Clinton is a Christian, that's as asinine as thinking that Donald Trump is a Christian, if not more.
I mean, because Donald Trump wasn't a Christian, isn't? I mean, I don't know.
Well, I don't know about right now, but at least when he was.
He's not a Christian.
Yeah.
Nothing about his life indicates any Christianity. He's not a Christian. He wasn't an evangelical when he came on the stage in 2016. I know a lot of Americans said, oh, he's such a great Christian, but that didn't make him a great Christian.
When he said, I've never had to repent of a sin.
You knew he wasn't
at the same
a Christian.
Time he said that, you know, 2 Corinthians is his favorite book of the Bible. No, he's not a Christian. And unless he's changed his mind, and he hasn't said anything to make me think he's changed his mind. But if he's changed his mind and said, I'm now a repentant sinner. If Hillary says, you know, wow, I realize that maybe my support of the Holocaust genocide of babies was probably a bad thing, and that maybe marriage is between a man and a woman, then and Jesus Christ is the only way to salvation. And maybe I might say, okay, I'm hearing you. You seem to now have something resembling even remotely a Christian faith. But this woman before that, she says that this woman has no even approximation of the Christian faith. I can't believe people take that seriously.
Okay, but here's the line that I think is funny. Tapping into a tradition of American civil religion. Okay, I thought that was bad, but
it's good if it's on the left.
Right. After a whole book about how that's bad, at the very end, she's like, oh, this is a version that's good. She urged them to summon the better angels of their nature, which she did while calling half of the country deplorable, right?
Right.
And beyond help, like, we just need to get rid of these people. On the campaign trail, she seemed especially at home among Black Protestants. Although, not really. Like, a lot of people noticed that when she went among Black Protestants, she pretended to have an accent, and she looked really stiff, and anyway. Among prophetic faith tradition, whose prophetic faith tradition bore many similarities to her own progressive Methodism. So there you are. This person thinks that progressivism is the same as regular Christianity. And the problem is progressive Christianity is not Christianity.
No, it's a...
And if evangelicals decide to be progressive Christians. Go read Elisa Childers. It's another gospel. It's not Christianity. Okay, so, but then here she mixes it up. For white evangelicals, Clinton was on the wrong side of every issue. Okay, no, it wasn't because of anybody being white or black.
Yeah.
It was really just about abortion, which impactfulnesses black communities much more greatly than white ones.
Well, but there was also the question of like economic theory. Like what?
Okay, here we go into this. A feminist and a career woman, she thought it took a village to raise a child. Okay. That's just a stupid thing to say.
Well, okay, well, no, well, let me finish. I remember this very well. Do you know what the problem is? With it takes a village to raise a child? The problem is, and people were talking about this back then.
It takes a state to raise a child.
That's right. Because the village in her mind is not the village. It's the child. It's the state. And the state then, if you put the state in as the one raising the child, then the state also determines what the child believes, what the child thinks about sex, thinks about God, thinks about everything. So yeah, that was the problem. And now that we're in, just take one look at the public schools and what they teach the children about sex and their bodies and what they can do with their bodies. And yeah, this is why the village thing was seen all immediately for what it was, which is a quasi-Marxist grab for power and the legitimization of parental.
Okay. She promoted global human rights authority and women's rights at the expense of U.S. sovereignty, at least in the eyes of her critics.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But no.
Women's rights meaning aborting your babies.
Yeah. So, and I, you know, what this is what, International Women's Day or something? That means that Americans, in the most patronizing, sickening way possible, export their imperialist abortion ideas around the world and tell women in other parts of the world who want children that they shouldn't want children and that they need to go paint murals on walls and they treat women around the world like children who don't know.
But that's
anything.
Not colonization.
That's not colonization. That's
colonization is like
Christians going
and telling people about Jesus, but it's not colonization for leftists to go and help people kill their babies.
Okay. She was pro-choice. Well, yeah. And she read the fact. Okay, here's the big, big disconnect for this person. The fact that she read the same Bible didn't register for most evangelicals, and her faith testimony came across as political pandering or just plain lying.
Yeah, well, because it was lying and political pandering. Okay. And yeah, she read the same Bible as what?
That's the problem. What? Is that you're not like.
And who cares who reads the what? The Episcopal Church reads the Bible.
Some of it.
Michael Curry reads the same Bible I read.
Not very but he's much a, of the he's whole
a,
thing.
He's a,
he doesn't read the whole thing.
He's a heretic. And so is, what's her name? The presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church before him, Catherine Jefferts Schori, read the same Bible that we do. And she came out of the same Bible that we do saying that the demon-possessed girl in Acts chapter 16 that Paul delivered from her demon possession was actually just expressing other spiritualities, and Paul wasn't tolerant enough to realize that.
So,
the same Bible, she's a heretic. Oh my goodness.
You gotta calm down.
I just can't believe it. Like, it's the same thing that was, it was the same thing. Who was it? It was Kyle Howard, maybe, who wrote on Twitter that, I think it was somebody, Hillary Clinton too, it was Kamala Harris. Wait, this is the controversy. Tom Buck, a pastor in the Southern Baptist.
Is this the Jezebel thing?
Kamala Harris, who wants to murder babies and destroy marriage, Jezebel. Right on. Amen. Cal Howard says she's a member of so and so National Baptist Church. As if that makes a difference. What? I mean, so that legit, that makes her a Christian? Because she goes to a really progressive church. I'm sorry, not progressive. Heretical church? No. I don't understand that reason. And no Baptist ever thought that before, right? I'm sure Cal McKissick, who's a Southern Baptist pastor also, doesn't teach his people, well, if you're a member of the church, a church, then you're definitely saved.
I read last night with my little Sunday school kids, we read about the wheat and the tares.
Right.
And we had an interesting discussion about how people go along together in the church, and you can't always tell who really knows Jesus and who doesn't. But in some cases, I didn't say this to them, you can tell like who knows Jesus and who doesn't, because the things that they say are totally contrary to the gospel.
Yes.
And it's not that hard either. Like, it's not like, okay, I do think it's terrible that some people were confused and thought Trump was a Christian. Like,
yeah,
you know, that guy in Texas who puts a big American flag on a stage and has Paul again, but Paul, that person that Trump had as his spiritual advisor, wasn't a Christian either. Like, that she wasn't saying Christian things, and Christians are allowed to say that's not Christianity.
Right.
I know that person claims to be a Christian. That person's not actually a Christian.
And that person might read the Bible,
but there are things that they're saying about the Bible aren't true.
Right.
And you can't actually know what the Bible says. It's like one of the things. Right. So this person has a progressive view of Christianity.
Okay, we should probably not use the word progressive, because that sounds like you're going forward into something, some wonderful golden future.
Well, that's the word that Elisa Childers uses when she talks about another gospel.
I know. I hate it though, because it sounds like, it makes it sound like we're like being left behind by history, because the progressives are progressing onto this.
Well, we are being left behind. We are like literally left behind. Incidentally, is it Tim LaHaye that wrote those books?
Yeah.
She has like a whole chapter about him because he's so wicked and bad. Okay, so we don't have very much more time because we do have to go on with our day, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about what you think masculinity and femininity are.
What I think of?
Yeah. Tell us, what should the ideal Christian man be?
Just like John Wayne. Just like John Wayne. Very big cowboy hat and carry gun. No, I mean, I don't think that, I honestly don't think that men and women should spend a lot of time thinking about, am I masculine or am I feminine? I think it's a boring thing to think about. But at the same time, I think this goes back to a discussion we were having. Okay, I'm interrupting myself here, but this goes back to a discussion I was having with somebody about the passage in Leviticus where it says, don't dress like a woman for your man, and don't dress like a man if you're a woman.
That's awkward right now because all clothes for women are those of a teenage boy.
Right.
So,
right. Well, what I'm saying is you can, but there's a difference in intent. Okay. So I think effeminacy is a sin when a man tries to make himself effeminate. He's actually looking at what he considers masculinity and trying to do the opposite thing. That's a sin. Or a woman trying to be a man. That's a sin. That doesn't mean that there's a clear biblical model for what exactly masculinity looks like in every culture. There's not. So there are cultural differences that that help you, or that will define what it looks like to be a man today, as opposed to maybe a man, you know, in Scotland in the 15th century. There's going to be differences. But I think the key is not to try and be what you aren't. Like, your body tells you what you are. You're a man, you're a female.
Yeah, like, you don't have to fight against your own biology all the time. Right. And your own, there's tension, as they say in the Episcopal Church, between your inclinations that are good and your inclinations that are bad. Like, not everything that you desire is completely and totally wicked. It's mixed up. So if you, like, if a woman really wants to have a baby, a lot of women really wish they could have kids. Yeah. That's not actually, like,
that's a good thing.
That's not bad.
So I think what I was about to say is you map out masculine and femininity in the broad contours in scripture, in the sense that, okay, I think scripture pretty much tells us that men should be leading in a family. Men should be somewhat aggressive toward the enemies of the weak. Not somewhat. They should be aggressive.
But Jesus was peace-loving.
No, he wasn't. the whole act of the incarnation was aggressive. He was going after sin, Satan, and death.
In a bloodthirsty way. He turned the other cheek. He was very meek and quiet, which as if meekness is like,
well,
you know, sort of Democrat sojourner option.
Okay, but the Old Testament literally says our God is a mighty warrior.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it actually does say that.
And you're just confused.
And Jesus is, and if you look at Revelation in the New Testament, Jesus is, he's actually coming back as a mighty warrior. He did come in weakness in his incarnation, in the sense that he was allowing the infirmities of human nature to rest upon him. And he came, but he still came to do battle. He came to do battle by giving himself over
right now, like
over to death,
explaining to a small child, which he shouldn't speak to people so condescendingly.
he was throwing himself into the pit for the sake of his bride. So think of it like a knight coming to fight.
Or John Wayne.
Yeah, or John Wayne, right. John Wayne's not a bad picture here.
Is he the one that drags Maureen O'Hara across the field by her hair or whatever?
That was maybe not the best moment, but but okay, so but there's a picture of masculinity for the Christian, which involves, again, protecting the weak, aggressively laying down your life to defend them if necessary, providing for your family if you have one, taking responsibility for your actions, leading in those situations where you're set in any kind of authority, leading with integrity, and sometimes those biblical characteristics are expressed in the culture in helpful ways. Like, so I don't think the idea of rugged manliness that was at least portrayed by John Wayne is in any way bad. I mean, it's not.
But it's also like not the only expression.
It's not the only one.
I mean, like,
but
you know,
you don't have to be John Wayne to be a man. But
I mean, the place that I go, and actually many Christians really enjoy the contours of masculinity and femininity in P.G. Woodhouse. You know, like that's not John Wayne at all. Everybody's wearing spats and everybody has a butler.
Right.
But yeah. Like you still get a really interesting sort of picture of all the different ways that men and women relate to each other. And the other is Anthony Trollope, actually. Mm. Like, go to Victorian England. You know, she brings up Victorian England, but I feel like she has no resonant emotional understanding of it, of how rich the relationships between men and women were before feminism really came bashing its way into the world. And I think that's probably my biggest critique, is that feminism and expressive individualism going together really, really transformed people's intellectuals and emotional understandings of themselves. Mm. And evangelicals through the century knew that something was really, really wrong, mm-hmm. and reacted in many ways, some of them good, many of them bad. But their underlying ideas about the human person and men and women were never theologically off base. Mm. They were expressed in many ways that we could critique. Mm. But it is so reductive just to read through the century as if evangelicals, being white and patriarchal, were therefore loving Trump without mentioning anything about any of the feminist issues of the last century. Like, your book is not serious,
right?
If you can't,
yeah, it sounds
even
like it was...
even mention what it is and define it appropriately so that it's recognizable to other thinking people and right. Christians. Like, it's not a serious work.
It's a little bit like, you know, when I read histories of the Cold War from a leftist perspective, it's almost as if the Soviet Union didn't exist. Right. So it's
that's
so
what
it's,
this
so
is
it's,
like. Like
so it's, there's no real threat anywhere to anyone out there. It's just the United States taking these horribly militaristic steps to oppress people and expand the empire. And you can only get that reading if you don't actually listen to things, or you don't read communist propaganda. You don't read the kinds of things that were being said within the Soviet Union in the 50s and beforehand. You don't know what the revolutionary impetus was behind exporting revolution beyond the Soviet Union. You just pretend that it was all a big joke. This whole nobody really believed the domino theory, or if they did, it was a stupid thing to believe. You just construct this alternate reality of the United States just being the aggressor, just being nobody really worried about the Soviet Union. It's just all a cynical ploy to exert our power, which is a lie. It's a slanderous lie. The United States made some serious mistakes, but did some bad things. But it's a lie to say that the history of the Cold War is all about American expansionism. Just as like it's a lie to say, just to study evangelicals without also studying the rise of the godless Marxist left and feminism. Right?
Yeah, like she talks about communism as if it's not
right.
Real, like as if the fear of communism right. was not justifiable or real anywhere. Right.
That's a lie. I mean, it's a slander, and the fact that legitimate Christian people are reading this thing and thinking it's a good thing is
it means no one really knows about history. Like history right. just began 15 seconds ago.
Right.
That's one thing, and then the other thing is that you. No, it went right out of my head. That the Christian faith is infinitely malleable,
right.
and that anyone can come along and just say, "Well, this is what it means to be a Christian," mm-hmm. and other Christians will say, "Oh, okay." And then, I guess, one thing that I would like to see. So, for instance, really interesting that under Trump, the rise of Me Too happened. For whatever reason, when we had Democratic presidents, women were being abused under feminism for a century, abused, raped, patronized, treated poorly,
yeah,
in every sphere for 100 years, actually since the dawn of time, but whatever. And it was only when Mr. Trump came in that people felt free to say, I've been treated very, very badly, and I'm upset about that.
Right,
you didn't have Me Too under Obama or Clinton.
Not under Clinton.
Why?
No, I mean, in
not?
Fact, there was.
And well, is because, that the evangelicals' fault? Because.
Well, I remember that when Clinton literally abused a woman in the Oval Office, the left was. And Hillary Clinton.
Shut that down.
Yeah.
And maligned and destroyed the life of that person. So completely that I've read that she's never ever had a full flourishing life in scare quotes. Okay, why couldn't women? Why don't women feel free when there's a Democrat in the office to come forward with their? Although our
because
own governor
because
is,
they're the good guys. It doesn't matter if a Democrat wants to molest you. Shut up.
Well. I mean, I'm really delighted that Mr. Cuomo is having these.
Oh, yeah, that's
come
right.
Up.
It's different than usual.
But it's unusual, right? Mm-hmm. And people complain about a double standard. But what I want to know is why, you know, a lot of presidents abused women in the office. FDR, JFK, Bill Clinton. I'm sure there's many more that we don't even know about. Mr. Trump comes along and he's not treated women well. No one, but. But you know, evangelicals said when he said that horrible thing about what he could get away with. Suddenly, American culture cares about women.
Yeah,
and I find that really specious. And
yeah.
Anyway, I'd like to see a history of feminism and Me Too that's done for real with real correlating graphs and things.
Right. Right.
Anyway. Now I have to write a review of this book. I felt defensive.
See, this is why I can't read that. I cannot read this book. I mean, just because what the brief little things you read to me are so outside the boundaries of
good scholarship,
reasonable thought. I mean, it's just. I mean, I can read some leftist screeds. I've read leftist screeds before, but this sounds like a heretical leftist creed, and what would make me difficult for me to actually read it is knowing that there are Christians out there going, "Ooh, this is so wonderful. This is explaining history to me in a way that I had never seen it before." This is why all those wicked, evil people voted for Trump. They're all wicked and evil. That's why.
Yeah.
They want to beat women and molest people.
I feel like this person is trying to make Trump into that fire in Nazi Germany, yeah, where then they rounded up all the Jews.
Oh, the Reichstag fire?
Yeah. I feel like that's what this person is trying to make.
Well, that was Trump how the Nazis gained power. They claimed that the communists burnt the Reichstag, and it may have actually been a communist, I don't know who it was, but the Nazis capitalized on the Reichstag fire to take power. You need a crisis to do something like that. So,
well, anyway, that's my final thought. I have one more thought. I felt defensive, and I feel like I should acknowledge that because, I'm married to you, and a lot of people for our, you know, when we met in seminary, were appalled by your aggressive masculinity, and people assumed that you would beat me and that you would, I would have to have a lot of kids.
Well, that proved to be true. And I forced you to have all these children.
Yeah, and that I would become a personless, you know, well, but you would put baby in a corner and then I needed Patrick Swayze to come along and like,
right.
Baby in a corner is my Rick roll. I'm like putting, I'm committed to putting it in literally everything. So I felt as I listened to the book, like this person's view of masculinity is also really fixed. She's accusing evangelicals of having a very fixed idea of what masculinity is, but actually she does. And it doesn't include a whole range of people because I know all kinds of men and they're all very different from each other and they're all recognizably men and they all treat their wives in different ways that are nice. And like, I don't really know any he men. Like, I don't know John Wayne personally. But,
I mean,
you're not John Wayne, but you're aggressive, but you're not. You're also a Christian. Those two things can go together. Women are aggressive.
Yeah.
Like, but that's this okay. Person is super aggressive.
That's okay, though, right?
Anyway, I would like to close with a story about what my dear aunt said was good wifely submission. And my aunt went to school with Billy Graham, my great aunt. She was, Billy Graham signed her yearbook. She knew him.
Yeah.
And my aunt, my great aunt, went on to become a doctor.
Did he beat her?
No, he was a funny guy. And she went on to be a physician. And, in my family, the women are very strong. Mm-hmm. And the men are strong too, but the women are very strong. Nobody put
Catherine
strong.
In a corner.
No one put Catherine in a corner. So my aunt, here's how you obey your husband. Ready? And then we've got to go on with our day. So when you are wanting to get your kitchen remodeled and your husband says to you, "We're not getting a garbage disposal because it's expensive and dumb and we just don't need to do that," and you know that your husband is wrong, but you also need to obey, what you do is when he's gone to work and between your work shifts work at the hospital, because you also work, you have the guy come in and quietly put in a garbage disposal and your husband never knows about it for 40 years that you live in the house.
Awesome.
And that's how you obey your husband. Okay. So, and there is the bastion of evangelicalism, as my aunt couldn't get anymore. evangelical.
She was.
She wanted the gospel message preached every single time.
Yeah.
At her funeral. So, anyway, we are going to be talking about this book for a long time. So, actually, we're not going to talk about it anymore. But if you want to know more about it, you'll be able to listen to the Stand Firm podcast. And I will be writing something about it also. So, now I have to go on and buy seeds. Do you have anything else you want to say?
No.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.